Glad to be here with you guys. I've not done this particular talk before. It's one of those things that you know a lot about, you know it inside and out, but being able to tell somebody about it sometimes is a challenge. So I hope it's not too terribly dry for you, but it is waterfowl regulatory process. It's not rocket netting kind of a year. And the way this team, and so we do have a 2-hour slot, so any amount of time I don't feel he can stretch his out, no problem. If I'm 15 minutes, he can talk an hour and 45, and so that kind of thing. That's something about being the last man in gets to do that. So, again, we're going to talk a little bit about waterfowl regulations. Dealing with waterfowl is a lot different than dealing with all the other game species or most of the other game species we deal with. When you deal with migratory birds, you have a lot more people involved in the process. When we set a deer season, you know, that's a resident animal. That's an animal that we as a state can decide how we manage our deer herd or how we manage turkey flock or how we run our squirrel seasons or quail seasons or whatever. But when you deal with migratory birds, and today we're going to talk primarily about ducks and geese. I'm not really going to go into doves. I'm also our state migratory bird coordinator, as far as working with doves and woodcock, but I'm going to talk primarily about ducks and geese, and mostly about ducks. And so when we talk about setting waterfowl seasons, again, it's a lot different than just a state season for deer. There are federal governments, there's international treaties involved, the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, I'm sure you've heard about in many different classes before. With that being said, I'm going to talk a little bit about the difficulties we have setting waterfowl seasons and all the different steps that we take. And I'm going to go off on little tangents here and there, and then I'm probably not going to be extremely focused at times. But if you have questions, I'd rather it be a conversation. I'm going to try to make it interesting for you. Sometimes if you don't have a passion for waterfowl, then you might not need to be taking a wetlands class. But again, just feel free to pipe up and let's talk about things as we go. And we'll see how this goes. And again, it's difficult to manage waterfowl seasons. It's difficult to deal with migratory birds and figure out how many birds that you have. A statement that someone made at the flyway meeting that I always use, wildlife biologists would like to have the ability to manage populations at a fine scale, but usually we measure things with a micrometer, mark it with chalk, and cut it with an axe. And a lot of times that's what we do with waterfowl season setting and waterfowl population management, harvest management. We can get down to really fine scale as far as determining what we can harvest, but a lot of times we can't measure that part. We can't measure exactly how many we have of different species. So we often make very specific recommendations, but we can't often survey populations, habitats at fine enough scale to detect changes or effects. All right. The majority of the ducks that we talk about, what we're going to talk about are the migratory species, and most of it are the dabbling ducks that we get in Tennessee. I think more than 80% of our harvest are mallards in Tennessee. And those birds are migratory. And at the very end of the talk, we'll talk a little bit about wood ducks, which are kind of an exception to that. They're a little bit different, as we know. They do migrate, but they're not, quote, producing the breadbasket of the U.S. And again, you know, you can see a little bit. This is the breadbasket or the prairie pothole region for waterfowl. That's the holy grail for waterfowl production. And the vast majority of birds that we get in Tennessee do come from that area of the country. And this is a slide that shows band returns in Tennessee. And it was a period of, I think, 1990 to 2000. But it's still pretty accurate now. And 27% of the birds coming out of Saskatchewan, 19% Manitoba, 15% Ontario. It's odd that we get some wood ducks and black ducks produced up in this area, in the marshes, in the southern Lake Erie marshes. And Wisconsin produces quite a few mallards that you wouldn't think about, but they actually produce quite a few mallards that get killed in Tennessee. So The bread basket is by far the most important area for birds in our flyway. Talk a little about the various surveys that we do for migratory waterfowl. We do a breeding duck survey each year. It's conducted by the Canadian Wildlife Service and Fish and Wildlife Service. Biologists estimate the numbers and species as well as the numbers of flooded ponds from airplanes flown along transects. A portion of the transects are then surveyed from the ground by biologists who census all the waterfowl. And they do corrections. It's the most extensive wildlife survey in the world. And it's the most important survey that we do when we come to setting waterfowl seasons and knowing what we've got out there. The process we use to set waterfowl seasons, as far as duck seasons, is called the Adaptive Harvest Management Model. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. But all of this data that we generate from our breeding duck and May pond count, they plug into our Adaptive Harvest Management Model. And there are the two primary data sources. There's some other information in there. But for the most part, these two sources, these two data sets right here it's been going on since, I believe, in the 1950s, I believe is when it was started. It's also the longest running survey of any of the surveys. And we also conduct, in the waterfowl world, I refer to all of us collectively, conduct a July duck production survey. A portion of the line surveyed in May are surveyed to obtain information on duck production. These counts yield the measures of duck production, an idea of timing of nesting chronology for the year. They let us know if we have a late re-nesting effort, late rainfall sometimes will flood out early nesting and you'll have a good re-nest or you'll have a poor re-nesting effort. And all of that information gets plugged in to try to determine what our fall flight is going to be. That is kind of our fall flight forecast. Each year the Fish and Wildlife Service tries to predict what the fall flight is going to be for all the various species. We have a fall flight for mallards, pintail, scaup, canvasbacks, all of the species. And although the Adaptive Harvest Management Model is primarily set up under the Mid-Continent Mallard Plan, the other species that aren't mallard stocks have their own bag limits and their own plans that determine what the harvest is going to be. Okay, got a little complicated, but the fall flight forecast, this is what gives us our information to set the bag limits on non-mallard stocks such as canvasbacks, scaup, etc. So these are some of the biggest surveys that we do in the waterfowl world as far as helping us determine what we've got and how to set our hunting seasons. And I keep talking about hunting seasons, because really, this whole regulatory process is about setting up a harvest plan. And I had an employer one time that made a statement that, I don't know, it kind of struck me odd to start with, and I thought, that guy, what is he talking about? But he told me one time, he said, ducks don't matter. Okay, ducks don't, people matter. And if you don't have hunters who care about waterfowl, then there aren't enough people who care about waterfowl to manage habitat and to lobby for land and CRP. And the things that allow us to have a thriving waterfowl population and flock. And the North American Waterfowl Management Plan that you talked about, that was brought on by hunters, okay? And so a lot of what we do is predicated around hunting seasons and having seasons to hunt. However, when waterfowl get below certain levels, politics is out of this, okay? There's no politics anymore involved. And we'll talk a little bit about that, too. There used to be a lot of politics involved in season setting. And now it's based on data. If the data doesn't support a canvasback harvest or a pintail harvest, which in recent years we've had chase seasons on canvasbacks and pintails, then whatever the biology says is, and that's how we set our seasons. Sure.
So the May surveys, they're surveying the ponds, they're surveying the number of...
Breeding ducks.
Okay, number of pairs.
Right, breeding ducks.
Does that go into the population estimate, or is that what is that information?
That is primarily used to what kind of seed. Okay, and I'll show you. ponds and breeding ducks, Medconic mallards. And as long as, is for instance, if the breeding pairs are down, but May pond counts are high, that means the potential is great, so you're more likely to be in a liberal harvest. And vice versa, if the waterfowl numbers are high, even though the May ponds are low, there's a lot of ducks, they're still going to have a pretty good harvest. It's when you start getting low pond counts and low breeding pairs that you start backing into moderate and even conservative. And
you would expect, obviously, if you're in a low situation, a fall flight forecast, you should give you a number of broods.
That's right. That's gonna be an indication of whether or not our AHM model is kind of is right or not. It's almost a predictive sort of thing. It's a check sort of to kind of see. It's not done primarily for that, but it gives us that ability to look and say, hey, you know, our AHM said that things were going to be not too good, and it looks like things are not too good, or that sort of deal. So. And in the waterfowl world, there are various other surveys that we conduct. Those surveys are May survey and our July survey are primarily handled on how many waterfowl we have active. But we also have a harvest inspection program that state has required to issue a hunter harvest information permit, a HIP permit. You get it free here in Tennessee. And that HIP permit is basically how the service surveys hunters at the end of the year to determine what the harvest was. Okay, in the old days they did what was known the old duck harvest survey, and it was a random survey of hunters selected from duck stamp sales and such. And this is just a little different way of getting their pool of hunters to survey from. We've got problems with the HIP survey in Tennessee. For years it was a free permit, and most states were charging for it, and as a result, a lot of people who weren't even waterfowl hunters would get the free HIP permit, and it kind of would skew the database so that, and another problem we have are the license agents, the Walmarts and stuff. They're supposed to ask a series of questions when they issue a HIP permit. How many waterfowl did you get? Any above 30? And that classifies you as an avid, a moderate, or a non-avid hunter. And so our sample, our survey, the National HIP Survey, is a stratified survey. So they pool and they stratify and they survey a group of avid hunters and a certain percentage of the moderate and the occasional, which represent a bigger group. Well, in the process of the Walmart people not asking questions, a lot of avid hunters are just categorized as you know, occasional hunters because they enter 0000000. It means they harvested 0 ducks, 0 geese, 0 doves, 0 this, even though they're probably avid hunters. So we've had a lot of variability in that data. Started charging non-sportsman's license holders for that HIP permit last year, but we still have a segment of hunting licenses. Problem with our law, when we set hunting licenses up originally, our sportsman's license was set up legally to cover all permits and licenses. And so even in order to have better data, we can start up with the But, again, it's really the best we have, and overall, it still gives you a pretty good idea.